Blog Talk Radio.
Gratitude, integrity, wisdom, balance,
family,
peace.
We ask only forth
connection
from the mystery of
unity.
The ethers.
Birth.
Yes.
Formally,
creativity. We ask you to become
justice,
a guide for all humanity, to open up in grace,
expression
to the universal offering,
beauty
with which we resonate,
vision.
We call you forth.
We call
peace
you
from the mystery of the
friendship. Thank you for hearing our
yes.
call.
Formally,
teach us to become our highest self.
We ask you to become.
Wisdom. Teach us to become
a guide for all
light.
Humanity.
Hope.
To open
we thank
up
you for helping
great.
Us access our inner wisdom.
To the universal offering.
Teach
with
us
which
to value.
We resonate.
Formally, may the people of all nations come
we
together
in the
movement,
a guide for all humanity,
and purpose
to open up in grace,
to help us make the world
to the universal offering with which
we, ask
we resonate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Today's Avatars. This is Gary Moore, your host, and the show is about how we are all becoming the avatars we admired from yesteryear. You know, the Buddhas, the Gandhis, the Christs, the Martin Luther Kings, the Mother Teresas of previous. How we are all becoming these avatars, you know, in people of all walks of life, whether they be Joe the plumber or Mary the bus driver. And we have a very special guest. He's an avatar in his own right with us today. His name is Sylvain Henry, and Sylvain is an activist. And what Sylvain is working towards in 2011 is to end secret geoengineering and chemtrail spraying worldwide by all governments. And he will accomplish this through global microactivism, social media promotion. And we will focus on what is working in the world here on this show and the solutions in raising awareness toward these chemtrails and geoengineering and peace. So let's go ahead and bring Sylvain on. Sylvain, are you there? How are you? Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Welcome, and it's good to hear you. You're coming through just fine, loud and clear. So, could you give us a brief rundown as to what you had in mind to talk about on this show, and we can take it from there.
Okay, I'd like to talk about two subjects, which are somehow related, as you'll see. The first is our chemtrail truth action, and the second is our activism towards world peace, meaning right now preventing the war in the Middle East.
Right.
My avatar is dead. His name is Mahatma Gandhi, but
okay.
2 years ago, I created an event called Peace and Prosperity, because I believe that you cannot have peace without more shared prosperity. And I invited his grandson. His grandson's name is Arun Gandhi. He's about 78, 79 years old. He's living in the state of New York, close to the Rochester area. And I tried to invite him, and to make a long story short, I was successful in getting him here in Ottawa, in the region where I live, the national capital of Canada.
Uh-huh.
And he was a great inspiration in that he was a great storyteller, perhaps like his grandfather. But because of his age and his responsibilities at the school and the Institute of Nonviolence and so on, he was not able to do the same thing that his grandfather did. So it's up to us. So I've learned much from him. My son was also with me when he presented at the Montessori Academy here in Ottawa, the Canadian Montessori Academy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, just as a side note, Maria Montessori, she's the founder of the school where we had the event, and Mahatma Gandhi knew each other when Maria Montessori fled from Italy during the fascist regime of Mussolini. She went to India, and she stayed in the ashram close to Gandhi. And they both had the same opinion that permanent peace cannot be established in this world unless kids are involved. In other words, the future generations.
Future generations, right.
So, anyways, that was my little note about the the avatar. And I've done many. Well, I've had some successful activism actions that I had initiated in the past, namely to help stop the recession back in 1984 in the province of Quebec, by getting tens of thousands of people. Supporting what I had to say, supporting one simple line, which we presented to the Premier, which was, Honorable Premier, help us to help ourselves find or create employment suitable to our education. And to make a long story short, we got what we wanted, and we were successful, and it took about 2 weeks' time. And this was all in the media. But that was back then. More recently, some 2 years ago, my son and I were instrumental in getting our city, well, my city actually is close to Ottawa, it's called Gatineau, to they were going to implement fluoridation of the water, the public water supply.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a majority, you know, it was like almost a done deal. My son and I and some other friends got together, and to make a long story short, we adopted a simple strategy, and within 4 or 5 days, they reversed their decision, and they voted 16 or 17 versus 2 against fluoridation. So that was another interesting thing. So that didn't require any money. It required very little time. It just surprises me every time we have a success that it's that easy.
Right.
And the last thing that I worked on was actually a national effort, which was, I called it a family physician for every citizen. Here in Canada, more than 8 million Canadians have no family doctor. And that is a problem because you can only go to the hospital emergency ward when you're sick. You can't have any preventative medicine, and you can't see a specialist either, and many other things. And so our national campaign was quite successful because one of the provinces, the premiers of one of the provinces, promised us that by the year 2014, every citizen in BC would have a family physician.
Uh-huh.
Let's see if that happens, but it's better than getting a form letter.
Right.
So, but my latest effort was against chemtrails. We've done a lot, and I have a four groups in Facebook, and I have an email list.
Mm-hmm.
A total of about 4,000 people of my own groups that we're communicating each day, sharing information about the latest development, about evidence. We're collecting evidence and so on. And to make a long story short about that one, what works is, I guess, the theme of you know, this show.
Uh-huh, right.
What worked was this, is that back a year and a half ago, myself and 20 other people got together and we wrote a form letter, a template, that anybody could send to any national leader in any country, because this is a phenomenon happening in many countries, more than 30, way more than 30. And so this form letter was circulated, and then I requested, please email your national leader by this date. And I was surprised with the number of people who did. The end result was that we have letters, paper letters, from 14 countries giving their official government response about chemtrails. Essentially, they're all saying the same thing. It's as if it's photocopied, you know, one nation to the next.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they essentially, they say it doesn't exist. But then we followed this up with another letter saying, we have proof. We'd like to discuss this with you, with one of your experts on the subject, a meteorologist, Department of the Environment or somebody, climatologist, the aviation department, and we'd like to give you a PowerPoint presentation, show our evidence. And we would like you to respond to us by Canada Day. Okay, and that worked in a way that chemtrails in Canada stopped for a period of about 3 weeks following Canada Day, because we didn't get a response from them ever, even till this date.
Wow.
They don't want to see the evidence. They don't want to see our presentations. They don't care. So we went and we took some other steps. You know, we helped create a bill. I call it the No Geo Bill or No Geoengineering Bill. It's a template that that is accessible to anybody in any state, in any country. Go ahead.
Real quickly, could you explain what geoengineering is to everyone?
Okay. Geoengineering is many things. Geo means the earth, and engineering means engineering the earth.
Right.
But scientists engineer the earth for profit, okay, or for some kind of advantage. Now, you can engineer the earth by changing the climate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Since 1964, scientists have been using changing the weather for their advantage in war. For instance, in the Vietnam War, they would help create monsoons. And what would that do? That would flood all the Vietnamese who had dug some tunnels under the ground. It would just flood them out or drown them.
Mm-hmm.
It would flood villages and so on. So,
and things like cloud seeding and that sort of thing for farming, for example. That's also a kind of a form of geoengineering, right?
Right, right. Uh-huh. And so now, but the kind, so it's an old thing, it's a proven thing, and we can create rain where we want to, and we can prevent rain from going on a country if we want to also, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that would affect food production and so on. But there's another kind of geoengineering right now that a lot of people call stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. And we like to call it chemtrails because it's visible, because
right.
Long trails of white smoke could go behind a plane. And this is being done in many different countries. And it's being observed by millions of people. And in my own group, I have thousands of people, and we have evidence. And
uh-huh.
This is not a regular trail that follows a plane, because a regular trail, it's a contrail, it's a condensation trail, it's like water vapor, which dissipates within maximum a minute or two. It's a small trail.
Right, and everybody's seen the difference, I think, between the contrail, which is the condensation trail, the condensation of water escaping out the exhaust of a jet engine, which goes across the sky, and then, like you said, it dissipates within a minute, depending on atmospheric conditions. Yet you see these lingering trails that stay there for hours and hours, and you know, they crisscross the sky, and I'm sure everyone has seen those.
Yes, and furthermore, these long chemtrails eventually become clouds, and they eventually serve to screen certain areas from
uh-huh.
the sun. Okay,
right.
It's a process called dimming, and now.
So they reduce the sunlight shining onto the Earth itself in that area, and thus alter the climate.
Right.
Uh huh.
But the reasons why they're doing this. You know, some people say that this kind of geoengineering is for helping to combat the phenomenon of global warming. However, at the same time, they say it's for that purpose, and they have researchers in Canada, primarily at the University of Calgary, who are working on the most effective way to dim the Earth using chemical agents, aerosols. So they're actually researching it, and they're proposing experiments to do it out in the UK, and Canada and the United States are collaborating with these experiments. And these experiments are public knowledge. You can read about them on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for the cheapest way to cover the most ground possible. And right now they're looking into a blimp, a giant blimp that is the length of at least 2 football fields, and that has a long hose connected to it, and it's trailing behind a ship, a tanker. And this tanker will pump the aerosols, some kind of sulfates or different kind of chemicals
mm-hmm.
that will serve that purpose. Now, these tankers could just go along for like months, you know, spreading these chemicals all over and doing this purpose. Now, this is public knowledge. This is in the mainstream media. And yet, when we ask our government about this, they say, no, there's no geoengineering possible. But the evidence is all there. There are agreements between nations, and one between Canada and the United States, about sharing information about geoengineering practices and so on. And yet, all this paperwork is there. All this experimentation is there. And these experiments will cost millions of dollars. And yet, the government still keeps on insisting that it's not true, and they will not speak with us. So, obviously, they're lying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
either that, or one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing, which is kind of questionable. Actually, I question that myself. I question all of it, really. But
if I was in Obama's shoes right now, because we got a response from President Obama ourselves, okay, regarding geoengineering. If he sends us a response saying that, no, it's not happening, and there's a special page on the EPA.gov website that you can refer to that answers your questions about this, you know, if he says, and he signs his name to it, and there's a seal of the United States of America on it, and you know, and he doesn't bother to verify the facts on something so important as this, and when we already know that millions, perhaps billions of dollars are being spent on research on this in the United States and in Canada, so obviously they don't want to tell us, and they don't have to tell us legally, because we found another document showing that it's legal for governments to spray us for experimental purposes. It's legal for them to affect us, and it's very sad, but this is a truth. And like, for instance, Agent Orange, which was used in Vietnam.
Developed by Monsanto.
Yeah.
Right?
Was still, until recently, being used right here where I live in Ontario over the forests. Mm-hmm. Over teenagers who were doing some sampling in the forests. And this was, you know, was done for at least, I believe, 2 decades.
Yeah.
Now, so we know that this has happened. We know that this is happening. But how do you force the government's hand to listen to you? And that's the problem. And so our our efforts towards chemtrails is continuing. But I wanted to use that as an example with details to introduce a more important topic than that. And that's what's happening right now in the Middle East, primarily against Syria and against Iran.
Right, right.
And I don't know who your audience is, but most likely it's an internet-savvy audience.
Oh, yes, they are. And very diverse all over the world, very internet-savvy. Many of them are awakened, if you will, spiritually, and aware of what's going on with the Middle East between Iran and the other countries over there, and how things are kind of working up to a head, and you know, between Israel and Pakistan and other areas as well. So,
it's in summary right now, the United States and the Western world, the NATO countries and the G20 countries are exerting a lot of economic sanctions, pressures against Iran and Syria, and for reasons we'll never know the real reasons. They say that it's again the story, the weapons of mass destruction that we've heard before.
Right.
And it's funny that, you know, you heard the saying, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Right.
Well, I think that applies right now because, you know, it worked in Iraq. Even though a lot of us never believed the story because we never saw the evidence, none of us did, even the politicians, and they went to war, and they killed over 1 million people over there.
Right.
America killed more Iraqis than Saddam Hussein ever did.
Right.
You know, unfortunately. But anyways, this the war against Iran and Syria is serious because since the economic sanctions did not scare Iran, they were not effective. It hurt them very much, but it didn't affect their resolve. Now they sent some military ships off the coast of Syria. Countries have asked this week, like Canada and United States, that all citizens to leave, all Canadian and American citizens and so on, to leave Syria immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And this also coincides with the official ending of the war in Iraq. Who won it? I don't know. It's still going on. People are still getting killed. But the soldiers are leaving Iraq. Where are they going? Are they going back home? Or are they staying put over there getting ready for this one? I don't know. But Russia and China have sent battleships in off the coast of Syria and in the China Sea, and they're telling America, no, you're not going to do this. And even Russia is providing arms, as everybody knows, who's on the internet, to Syria so that they can defend themselves. And now there are missiles in bases all around Iran and Syria. Unfortunately, the northern portions are close to the Russian border, so the Russians don't want to have any problems. So all I'm trying to say is that it's going to take just a small skirmish to start a thermonuclear war in that region. Mm-hmm. I don't want that to happen.
Right. Well, we also know that what you know, the law of attraction states that what you push against pushes back. So it's not about being anti-war, it's about being pro-peace. It's not about being anti-chemtrails, it's about being pro-clean atmosphere, clear atmosphere. So this is what we are talking about. These are the things that work. The question is, how do we become pro-peace? How do we raise the awareness of people around the world? One of them is doing radio shows like this one. And so attribute some of your successes in how we go about doing these things.
Okay, well, that was a good question. Like every day I was on the internet, I was just watching the news and realizing how serious this was, but still that wasn't a solution. We need to find out what works. And so I told my friends from my groups, I said, I'm taking a Facebook fast and for a few days. I took about a week off. And then I started researching, what can ordinary citizens do? Because as in the case with chemtrails, we're powerless. You know, the government doesn't want to talk to us. This is not a real democracy. So I came up with this. I started writing some ideas, and then I came up with my list called 1001 Things We Can Do for World Peace.
Uh-huh.
And these are not anti-war, but believe me, if you do just 10 of them, it can prevent a war. But I learned so much as I was thinking of these ideas, because it's very, very hard to come up with 1,000 ideas on anything, mm-hmm. especially about how to make peace. And what I came up with is that I realized, number one, there's no peace industry.
Right. Okay.
There aren't many peace products, peace services, or peace experts, or peace technology. I was surprised, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I dug into it, I said, my God, this is a marketer's dream. This is like a virgin niche market that nobody's gotten into. I guess because peace is not a profitable direction to go into, or maybe it wasn't before.
Right. It has been made apparent to be profitable, not as war has been made apparent to be profitable.
You know, war is definitely very profitable.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We wouldn't have them if it wasn't profitable.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And I think it's a matter of shifting the awareness of the world to make peace as profitable as war, which I think that can happen. So how do we do that?
Okay, well, to rage peace, okay, not war.
Right.
You know, to enter the peace race, not the weapons race, two things were needed very fast. The first thing that was needed is a list of actions, what we can do, small actions that anybody can do in their spare time. And the second thing that needed to be done is a list of people to do these actions with. So on this list, which I have on the internet as a just a single web page, very long one, I listed all these items, and every time somebody looks at it, about 100 people right now look at the list. The list has been up for about 7 days now. And they look at the list, and if they see an item of interest, they email me, or they click comment, and in the comments they put, I'm interested in doing numbers 1, 35, and 422. So okay. What I do is I go back in the list and I put their initials in it, and then I ask their permission. Do you want me to create a link to your email address or to your website? They always say yes, but I always ask them anyways.
Great.
And so you have a list of things to do, and some of the items have people you can do them with. So this is creating a peace community, little by little, day by day, stone by stone. And it's attracting attention.
Right. Okay, for the benefit of everyone listening to this in the archives, could you say the website or the site where the list is located?
Well, it's one of these Google Docs that's too long to mention, but
okay.
If people can either search my nickname on the internet, which is one word, Canadian Spartacus,
okay,
all one word together, they will find the list, or they can do a search for the phrase 1001 things we can do for world peace, and you search for that entire phrase and you'll find the list.
Okay, and you can also be found on Facebook under Sylvain Henry, right?
Yes.
And that's Sylvain Henry. So,
yes.
Just for the benefit of those listening in on the archives, you know, you can access all kinds of different ways.
And by the way, there's 20 Sylvain Henrys on Facebook, and I'm the one who lives in Ottawa.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So, now, a lot of people were very passive before about peace because they know that our leaders don't want peace. And what's the proof of that? Between the year 1900 and the year 1999, 200 million soldiers and civilians were killed in wars in that 100-year period. And that was with old, antiquated technology, not with today's firepower. If there is a world war ever again, that number, 200 million, will be very, very conservative.
Yes, yeah. Somebody, I think, back at the end of World War II, around the late 1940s, someone asked Albert Einstein what he thinks World War III would be fought with. And Einstein thought about it for a moment and scratched his head, and he says, "I'm not sure. I'm not sure what World War III would be fought with," he said. "But World War IV would be fought with sticks and stones." So I remember that.
it's these wars were created by our leaders, you know, mostly men,
right,
throughout history. You know, I don't know if it's something to do with our higher testosterone level than women, but there's something in the makeup of men that makes us lead people into wars.
And I think a lot of it had to do with fear and control. That's just in my humble opinion. You know, when you're fearful of something, you want to control it and, you know, bring it under control and make it obey to your whim and will, or make it operate within your own parameters of what you are secure with. And, you know, everyone knows and are coming to know that control has been the very thing that has held us all back as a species. And we are waking up to this, and we are also waking up to honoring things like the divine feminine. You know, I come from the Native American teaching. You know, I have Native American background and Native American spiritual teaching, and that was built into that process, was honoring the divine feminine, which is to preserve and protect all life and honor all life. And war just simply does not do that. So we are globally, I think, making a shift in the awareness and in the consciousness of people. And I think a lot of it has to do with planting seeds in people's consciousness, like we're doing on this radio show. That I like to think that's my job, and is just to plant seeds in the awareness of others, is to open their minds up a bit as to what the possibilities or alternatives are, and to place our focus, you know, away from that which we don't want or are afraid of, such as war and things like that, you know, and things that instill fear in us, shift our focus away from those things and all the emotional charge behind it, and to place our focus on what we wish to experience, like peace.
And I strongly believe that women will have a major role to play in preventing what I hope will not happen. But I think what is needed, and I'm happy that you mentioned that you're of Native origin,
mm-hmm.
because I think what this world needs right now is a tribe. We need to have a community. I like to call it a tribe. You know, we're a close-knit community where people need each other to survive.
Yes, a global tribe.
A global tribe. And I'm not talking about the New World Government, one government. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking that it's time for the citizens of the world to unite with each other. Forget the leaders.
Right.
Because the citizens don't want war. And
right.
the tribe has power. And I lived up north in the James Bay region with Eskimos and with the Native Indians, the Crees.
Mm-hmm.
They knew it. And I learned so much from them. I'll give you an example. The tribe has, let's say, 100 men. The men in that tribe would hunt the big game, and the women would hunt the small game, like the rabbits. But the men would leave for long periods of time, following the caribou herds or whatnot. And then they had an unspoken agreement in the tribe. It's always one hunter who gets the caribou. It's not usually the same one, though there are some that are a bit luckier than others.
Okay.
But the one who got the first big game kill, would come. Of course, he would have the first piece, but the animal was shared with the entire community because he knew that next time, if he didn't share his kill with the community, that they wouldn't share it with him. So the tribe is about sharing,
mm-hmm.
and you know, about caring for each other. But now with all the gadgets that we have, there's too much, I don't know, electronic disturbance in the air that is separating us from each other. Just in homes, people rarely have suppers with, you know, with their spouses or with their children at the same time. You know, they're all in different rooms. You know, one is listening to iPod music and the other is playing these online video games. Another one is on the internet and the other one is watching 1,001, you know, satellite channels. So we need to have that tribal spirit again.
Yeah, bring that togetherness together, you know, back into the awareness of people. I come from Lakota heritage. I am part Lakota Sioux of the Sioux tribe, Lakota tribe. I have an uncle that is a medicine man, and he leads the Sundance every year. And we have a saying. We say it at the end of every prayer, and we say it all the time. And what we say is, Mitakuye Oyasin. And Mitakoye Oyasin, the direct meaning is means all my relatives or all my relations. But the essence of that meaning is we are all related. And we are all related in spirit to one another, and not only to one to another, but the philosophy is you're related to everything else. You know, you're not just related to one to another, which we are. But we are also related to everything else on the earth. You know, you're related to the chair you're sitting on. We're related to the computer we're talking on. We're related to the sun. We're related to the earth. We're related to the tree. We are related to all of it. We're related to the water. We are part of it, and it's a part of us. It was always a togetherness, oneness philosophy. And all of this stuff that has come down the pike that just reinforces the illusion of duality, whether it be political affiliation, which is an illusion that's designed to keep us divided, or anything else, simply diverts our attention away from the truth, which the truth is we are all one. And I love it how science and spirituality are both coming together in this point, that we are one. You know, things like quantum physics, you know, they talk about the unified field. And we are all part of it, and it's a part of us, and so is everything else. And I love it. This is a fascinating time to be alive and a fascinating time to expand our awareness along these lines, that we are literally one. And the more we do it within ourselves, I think, the more the world will follow suit. And the more the world is waking up to the fact that if they reach out and hit somebody and hurt someone, they go, ouch. They go, ow, I just hurt myself. Because that's what they're doing. You know, everything is a reflection of what you've got going on inside of ourselves. So if we look out and we see malaise and illness and different things in the world, I was also taught that to turn our eyes inward and forgive that part within ourselves that does not see it as completely whole, fixed, and perfect. And continually doing that, you know, using that Ho'oponopono energy, which is that I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you type of energy, that vibration, which we do to ourselves. We say, you know, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, to yourself. And then that puts us back at zero point so we can experience the next moment in that piece and continue to move forward with our energy shifted and to be more of a peaceful mindset. And the more I do it personally, the more it works, the better it works. So that's just a little something I would like to recommend at this juncture. And also, I want to recommend to anyone who's listening in, feel free to call in. I want to invite any callers to call in, and feel free to call and see if you have any questions to address to Sylvain. So.
Hi. I'd like to, you know, now that you mentioned that you're native, I'd like to talk about two other examples I've experienced up in James Bay.
Okay.
About the sense of community and why they've got peace up there, okay? I'll call it the story of Joseph. I was new there, and I was hired as the social director of the village, and my job was to weed out drugs and to help people be sober. And I wasn't accepted in the community. I was white, you know, and they just dropped me in a plane there, and a seaplane, and I landed there. And for a couple of weeks, I was in my cabin. Nobody talked to me, and some funny things happened. But at some point, I walked into the village one day. This 11-year-old boy called Joseph got hit by a three-wheeler. Another native hit him. And so I went up to him, and he said, "I'm hurt." So I just took him and I brought him to the nursing station. They don't have hospitals up there. Mm-hmm. And then when he got all bandaged up, I brought him. I said, "Where do you live? Which one of these houses or teepees is yours?" They don't live in teepees anymore, but they still have them for drying goose. And also for their, I don't know what they call them, sweat lodges also.
Okay.
And so he said, "I'm the village child." He said, "All of these homes are mine." I didn't understand what he meant. So he said, "Pick a house." So I said, "Okay, we'll go to Constable Chizo's house." You know, he's the constable's like the sheriff of the place. And so we go to his house. He just walks in. He doesn't knock. He sits on a couch, he goes in the fridge, and I said, "How can you do that in any house you want?" And he just left, and he went to play with the kids outside, and he left me with the adults of the house, and the people there, the constable and his wife, explained to me what he was. His mother didn't want him at birth, but in that area, they're not very much for abortions, so they gave him up to the village. And when they do that, you belong to the child, to the entire village, and everybody is your brother and sister. So I actually slept in the constable's house. I ate some of his goose, and I learned a good lesson about community. And another quickie, one day, I think the only day of the year, they they mow the lawn in the cemetery. They call it the Day of the Dead, or the Ceremony of the Dead. The entire village goes up to the to the graves of their ancestors. Everybody goes. Everybody goes. The children, the babies, everybody. And it's kind of like a picnic, if you will. Okay. So they go, they lie down over the graves of their ancestors. And I was so blessed to be able to witness that. And they just meditate, they talk to the dead, this and this and that. They feel at one even with those who are dead. They have a spiritual connection with the earth and even those who have left the earth. It's just, this sense of unity is eternal, you know. So, I've learned so much from them. But they're another shining example of how we could be a community again if we just let our technology gadgets down for a few minutes and look at each other and maybe we're not that boring.
Right.
I believe that community is very important, and a lot of people seek that on the internet. Actually, some communities are happening on the internet. But your role as a radio show host is so pivotal, because so many people listen to radio shows like yours, and I heard that you were very popular on the internet. And this could be a community point. This could be a place where people are not afraid to say their fears about what's going on, their fears about their frustrations with governments, that the governments are not listening to them at all. So I'm hoping some kind of magic will happen in a radio show like yours.
Well, that's always been the intent, as far as I'm concerned, is to bring about a community globally of people who, you know, this is to provide a podium or a platform for others to find their voice and use it, you know, and voice the things that they're concerned about. This is, it's not about me. It's about the world, and it's about raising the awareness of the world, of the globe. You know, I didn't wake up without someone planting seeds in my awareness. And in so doing, I'm paying it forward here and hopefully planting seeds in the awareness of others. That has been my mission ever since I got back into broadcasting. I'm an old broadcaster. I've got about 30 years experience. But with this new awakened information, it's more vital to get the word out there now that the power is within us. There's a power in us that's greater than anything in the world, and all we need to do is think differently, and that power will begin to emerge, and that power will feed us, it will clothe us, it'll house us, guide us, and protect us. It'll sustain our very existence, and all we need to do is allow it and focus on that power. And that power will begin to emerge. And that power is love. And it's based on love. Love is really all we are. All the rest of it is paint and conversation. But love is simply the driving force behind it all. It's the thing that keeps us all together and has propelled us through life, you know, for lifetimes. And that's basically all my philosophy has been. And it is important, you know, that there are others who need a podium, you know, that have their voice and they want to stand up and they want to say something. They've got something to say. So I'm humbled to provide that platform.
And you're right. Love is key, because in a world of fear that we live in, you know, it's written in many, many religious books that love conquers fear.
Right, right.
And like myself, I've been a very positive and peaceful activist in many areas, fluoridation and peace and anti-chemtrails and all that stuff. And because I'm becoming effective, because some of the things that I do actually work, I've received threats. And one of them was a death threat last year. It was an indirect one. They asked me on the phone. They asked me to stop what I was doing. And I said no. And they asked me what kind of music I wanted to hear at my funeral service. Mm-hmm. So I consider that a threat. And but I go on because I love my children, I love people, and I believe that most people are good in this world.
Yeah, and speaking of these death threats, you know, the things that these entities try to do to us, you know, to invoke that fear. There was one that occurred just recently, like as of last night, with David Wilcock. So, you know, as we come up and state and stand in our truth, firmly rooted in our truth, in this wind of change, that stuff's going to happen. And he was, I listened to him last night on the air with Carrie Cassidy while the show was streaming, and initially he was filled with the fear. He did buy the ticket to the rodeo of fear. By the end of the show, though, by the time the show was over, he was already shifted back into his truth and standing firm and that sort of thing. So even you know, even those things, you know, that fear may work temporarily, but not for long. Not when we stand firmly rooted in our truth, and not when there is so much support out there. You know, David Wilcock, and I'm sure yourself, you know, you're not alone, and you know you're not alone. And the support suits up and shows up when you need it, you know, and that's also an amazing thing that I've come to be able to witness and experience. So kudos to all of you who are standing in your truth. And I just also want to say something real quickly. We have a caller. Would you like to go ahead and take the caller, or how are you doing? You need a break or take a drink of water, or how are you holding up?
No, I'm holding good. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and bring the caller on. They do have a question mark up, and they're from a 905 area code. I'll bring them on. 905, you're on the air with Gary Moore and Sylvain Henry. Hi. Who is
Hi,
what's your name?
Hi, are you talking to me?
Yes.
Hello, I'm Jack.
Hi, Jack. Do you have a question for Sylvain?
Yes, I just wanted to kind of supplement some of the things that he has said. Sylvain, you know who I am. It's Jack.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, hi, Jack.
Great.
Yeah, hi. I kind of have a possible solution to some of the warring stuff and some of the other stuff, but it's maybe in a roundabout way. Let me just kind of diverge and then converge.
Okay.
If you look at the size of the debt, and if you look at the size of any surplus, you will see that it will be hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. I've already done the calculations to pay off the debt, and that would mean that you would have people born 20 generations out having to pay the debt, never having voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a crime against democracy. So, number one, that's just point number one. Number two, in order to kind of get away from all of this money that goes into warring, since money is printed and it goes to the special interests first, I think what we all ought to do, since everybody gets the debt, is money, when it's printed, is equally distributed to the public. And then you try to tax it for the wars.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it just won't happen.
No, that's
and that's
the problem,
how you'll
yeah.
stop this.
Yeah.
You'll stop
yeah.
the funding of wars and everything else.
Mm. Right. And this whole thing of debt is an illusion anyway. It's illusory. And speaking, again, turning back to David Wilcock, he was coming out and pointing that out last night, how it's all just simply an illusion. It's going to be a couple of days, is what he said. It's going to be a matter of days before we come to realize really fully exactly how much of an illusion it's been and how much better off we really are. And that's basically all he said at that juncture last night. But the stuff, I think, is beginning to fall away. And the things that we have been fearful of for generations, is beginning to have light shed upon it. And people are waking up to the fact that this is an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
so my point would be is that if you print money and distribute it equally, we would all have money, and the special interests would get it last. In fact, humans would get it first. Corporations would get it last.
Mm-hmm.
And I had nothing wrong with corporations that do good business. The special interests will not get it first.
Exactly.
They're the ones that are doing all these things in the world.
Because there simply is more than enough. There's more than enough to go around. There's more than enough money. There's more than enough fill in the blanks, really.
Even if money was required and they print it like they did a couple of years ago, that money went to one or two or three or four groups of people.
Right.
And everybody got the bill. Can you imagine if they had printed all that money and then equally distributed it to the public instead of giving it to the special interest first?
Right. Yeah.
Just imagine.
It would shift the awareness from the illusion of debt to the illusion of abundance.
Well, there would still be debt because the central bank would still kind of send money to the government. But what you have to do is you have to take the printing of money away from a private banker and bring it to the community, if you want to call it that. Because that's what Canadian Tire does here in Canada. When they issue Canadian Tire money, they don't go to a bank and borrow the money. They have a department that prints it at cost, and then they use it.
Well, there are some little baby steps maybe towards that goal and that are already being taken, okay? You mentioned Canadian Tire money, okay? Canadian Tire money in the Ottawa region, you can use it at many other stores, not just Canadian Tire. So that's becoming like real currency, okay? But in one city in Europe right now, they're printing their own local money in the city, okay? And the advantage is that you can use that money only in the city, so it encourages local businesses and it competes with globalized business, which is a very, very good thing. And so that is working, and other cities are looking at that model too. Another city, what it has done is that the city is now growing all its own food, you know, in vacant parking lots, in regular parks and over buildings, you name it. You know, it's a regular Babylon, okay, Hanging Gardens of Babylon. And the people are trading food with each other, and it's all organic and it's all fresh. And it's in a warmer climate. I believe that's in the United States. So that's money will not be required for that. But recently, a lot of people know the connection between global banks and big business and also wars. There is a connection. So what people have been doing is that they're transferring their funds away from the global banks and into local banks that only have local branches, like credit unions and so on. And that has been so effective. Billions of dollars in the last few months have changed hands because the word is getting out through media like this. And the people say, well, it's not complicated. It's legal. It's my money. I just bring it over there. And that is scaring the big banks, and it's affecting, many levels down. So there are some little baby steps being done, but there are considerable ones, and they're working. Yeah.
Another point that Sylvain touched on, and I'm just shifting topics here really quickly, is on the legalization of chemtrails, if you want to call it that. If you ask any police officer, can you consent to bodily harm? And they will tell you it's not lawful. You cannot consent to bodily harm. And chemtrails are a part of bodily harm. I think we ought to know that.
Well, the problem, I've dealt with that. I met with cops, and believe me, there are some cops who are against chemtrails. It's just that they won't share it with the rest of the fraternity because we don't need to get in here.
Mm-hmm.
But I sit down with these cops and these police officers, and I ask them questions, and they ask me questions. They say, okay, yes, a crime is being committed, and it's a mass crime, okay? Because they know it has negative effects on us. It changes the soil's pH degree. It affects causes respiratory problems.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't think that respiratory problems are an issue, go into the World Health Organization statistics bank, looking at the main reasons for mortality or the main killers, if you will. And respiratory ailments was like in position number 7 a few years ago. It's position number 2 last year. It might be position number 1 this year.
Wow.
And a lot of people have asthma, allergies, emphysema, bronchitis, pneumonia, anything related to the lungs, the passages, and the alveoli. So the problem is, the cops say, is how do you prove it's that plane causing the problem? Because they know it's not normal, because these trails are not continuous. Some of them are spotty. You have spot, 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 you know, like a dotted line on the highway.
Right.
And some of them, you have two engines on a plane and you have three trails coming out of the plane, and so on and so on. Now, they say, how do you prove it? Now, there is a group that I know, the Belfort group in Belgium, that is trying to get a project. They have a team ready. Now, it's a question of just funding. What they want to do is they want to sponsor a plane, fill it with scientists to follow those planes and to collect samples as close as possible to the source and to see the level of concentration of and the different substances that are in those chemtrails. That would be proof enough. Now, can we legally do this? I don't see why not. Are there scientists willing to do this? Yes, they are. Is the plane available for this? Yes, it's just a question of a little funding for this. The name is Peter, I can't pronounce his last name, Vereski, out of Belgium. He was a former mayor, by the way. He's the one who founded the Belfort group. As some of you know, this is the group that created the world's first international conference on chemtrails, against chemtrails, in Europe, and it was very, very successful. So they have all the evidence. There's no lack of evidence. There's a lack of will.
Mm-hmm.
The government refuses to look at the evidence because they've got their hands busy or whatnot. That is one way we can collect direct samples. Another way is to... We can find out where these planes are coming from, but the problem is we can't identify these planes because they're white. That's what the cops said. They took some telephoto images of these planes, real close up, and they're all white. There's no markings on them. Like usually a plane has a tail number. Like we've got license plates.
Right.
Except military vehicles, but these planes have no tail markings.
Fascinating.
So you can't say who it is. You can't blame anybody. There's got to be a way to find out if a commercial plane is flying at a certain time over a certain space in a certain direction. That information must be available somewhere. I think Jack may know how to do that.
Yeah, it's easy. You just have to go to certain websites and you'll see all the commercial traffic flying over.
Right. And you can... So in your area, you can see if that's a scheduled commercial flight. If it isn't...
Yeah, I can look outside my window within a few minutes and see that plane is going to Miami.
Right.
Wow.
And I know it's about 10 or 15 or 17,000 feet altitude. And I can tell you the speed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming right over my house within minutes of when I'm expecting it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those who have the most credibility to talk about the subject, I'll name one person, have been killed. Ted Gunderson, many of you know, he used to be the chief of the FBI for the Los Angeles area.
Right.
And you can look on the internet, his videotapes and so on, and there are testimonies from his doctor and from the person who conducted the autopsy on the man, and the black and purple markings on his fingers, all pointing to arsenic poisoning.
And wasn't there a full-length film done on chemtrails?
What in the world are we spraying?
Right.
Michael J. Murphy. Yeah, it's a very, very good... If anybody has access to YouTube, just type in, what in the world are they spraying? And I'm sure you'll find a copy of Michael Murphy's movie, or contact Michael Murphy directly. And it's a great movie for... documentary, I should say, for people to to learn about this subject if you're just, you know, learning about it.
Right, right. And it's a great film. I've seen it, and it has gone around virally around YouTube and on Facebook and so forth. And it is a good one to see, to edify yourself as to what these chemtrails really are and what the chemicals are that they are spraying.
Can I add something here?
Certainly.
Okay. I have another angle towards this, and because I've got lots of pictures, and I think a lot of people kind of have seen what's going on, when these lines in the sky come across, they fairly quickly spread out. You can actually get within 2 hours from blue sky to what I call no sky, and that blocks vitamin D, and that risks life. Now, for those in Canada, if you go to the criminal code and you go to section 467.11, 467.11 basically says that if somebody acts or fails to act and a criminal organization is further advanced by that action or omission, it's a criminal code violation. I just wish that somehow we can get some traction on that. Because
you mean arrest the cop?
some kind of traction, because blocking vitamin D would be an aggravated assault.
Yeah, but the thing is,
you
can't jump up in the air and get the pilot to stop, you know, doing this.
No, but we can ask the authorities for help and assistance.
So far, nobody
kind of wants to come out and help and assist. And you know what? I say 467.11 on them.
Hmm. Well, you know, I know you can easily buy very inexpensive handcuffs at a Home Depot, you know, these plastic ones. But the thing is, and I also know that in our country, Prime Minister Harper passed a new law that allows citizens' arrests. The thing is, you can't arrest anybody without having evidence that they...
Evidence of vitamin D.
There's evidence of blockage of vitamin D.
There's a lot of
circumstantial evidence, but
the evidence is all there, circumstantial and direct. The thing is, we can't. I don't believe we should have a hostile approach towards the authorities in order to tackle this. I think we need to have the cops and the justice system on our side.
Right.
And the way to do this is by radio stations and
awareness.
I plead. Awareness. If anybody listening to this radio station is a police officer or a justice of the peace somewhere in my area, I would be glad to give a PowerPoint presentation of the evidence we have accumulated. And in something, there should be a commission to investigate this. But there's no political will to do this, and we'll be blocked at all levels. So we have to look for an alternative route. Our authorities are blocking this,
mm-hmm.
unfortunately.
Yep.
Well, how do we go about bringing about this awareness, though? You're saying, you know, those who are within the sound of your voice, which they can be. This show will be archived and recorded and turned into an MP3, and you can use this MP3 in whichever way you see fit, however distribution you would like to use it for, Sylvain. How would, again, for the benefit of someone listening to the archive, how would they get a hold of you?
Well, they can reach me at my email address, sylvain.henry@ymail.com, okay, or gmail.com, sylvain.henry@gmail.com. Either of these two, or preferably both, because for some reason some email doesn't reach my Gmail address sometimes. And they can contact me directly on my cell phone, 613-600-LEAD, or 5323. I'd be happy to contact. If they want to see something about my opinions, they can go on my YouTube, Canadian Spartacus in YouTube. And at some point, the pilots will be on our side. because they realize what they're spraying is harmless. Well, they're not too sure. Maybe they're being told it's an experiment, or it's to create dimming, which will save the planet from who knows what.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have enough education to become an airport pilot, you have enough knowledge, I believe, to know that this information is not true. They just have to look at the cylinders and the MSDS sheets of the compounds they're spraying on us. MSDS means material safety data sheets. And they will realize that these chemicals are no good. As a matter of fact, you realize that a lot of planes, commercial planes, are flying in the air right now. Maybe a lot of them are going through these trails. And the cabin air that passengers breathe comes from outside. The cabin is pressurized, but the fresh air comes from outside. And it's a known fact that the air inside those cabins is more toxic for different reasons. But one of those reasons may be chemtrails. You look at the number of pilots, co-pilots, flight attendants, flight navigators, passengers that are affected by the toxicity of the cabin air on commercial flights. They don't recommend pregnant women to go on flights anymore. It's that bad. So that is an issue. Toxic cabins.
Mm-hmm.
So
I had no idea.
Yeah. So one of my friends has a website on that. I forget what it is right now. I'm sure she might call up one day. I believe the chemtrail pilots at some point will have enough of this, and they don't care if they'll risk their profession. They will talk, and if they do talk, they can use the phone number which I said earlier. Contact me. I don't want to know who they are. I don't even want to know their contact information. I just want to know what they know, and lead us to where this is being distributed, what airports are they flying out of and back into, what chemical company suppliers are providing the aerosols. That's all we need to know. The rest we'll figure it out. You can call from a public phone booth. Don't release your name. We just want to have the information. So
they can keep their anonymity, in other words, while reporting this, yeah.
Yeah, because they're afraid. You know, people die over these things, you know. And if people think that the government is not capable of murdering a citizen, just keep in mind how many American presidents were killed by their own people.
Right.
You know? So they wouldn't hesitate to kill civilians or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the SEAL Team 6. Where are they now? The ones apparently that killed Osama bin Laden.
Right, right.
They're dead.
Yep.
Conveniently.
Yeah, how convenient.
Yeah, it goes on more than we care to realize and or acknowledge. Yeah.
It's all mysterious stuff, but...
Right. Well, we have another caller. I'll go ahead and bring them on. It's a Skype caller.
Thank you.
No, stay with us, Jack. You can just stay with the conversation here. 1111 Skype caller, you are on the air with Sylvain Henry. What's your name and where are you calling from? Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello. Yeah.
You're on the air with Sylvain Henry. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yeah, from USA.
How you doing? Did you have a question for Sylvain?
Maybe, yeah.
What's your question? Oh,
maybe
looks like he hung up.
At the same time at the radio show.
That may have been. He may have been calling in to listen, but he dropped off, so not sure.
Maybe it was a language issue. You know?
Quite possibly.
Yeah. But I hope they come back, whoever it is, because we want to hear your question.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear him back.
Yeah. But this is a topic which is very, very hot with a lot of people right now because it's so obvious. It's plain. You look up. There it is every day, practically.
Yeah.
Yeah. all over the sky, practically anywhere in the country, anywhere in the globe, you see it.
And if you want to see it well, look at the satellite images over your area,
mm-hmm.
and you'll see these straight lines which were never seen before. And these miles stretch for hundreds of miles.
Yeah, and it is affecting the climate of the ground itself, you know, by reflecting the sunlight away from the ground, and it's doing something.
I can kind of add a little bit to that. Like, I know somebody here with kilometers of where I live.
Okay.
Who has a garden all the time, and they're pretty consistent. They're a foreigner, you know, from another country where they were born in another country. They came here. They immigrated here, and they had a successful life here, and they have a garden. And normally, every year, they would get about 101 or so bottles of tomato sauce. This year, 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a decrease there, yeah.
26. So I kind of go along with the blockage of vitamin D. That is risk to life.
In some communities in the United States, it has affected the pH of the soil so much that it has degraded the trees and weakened the barks of the trees. I think there's enough research that's gone into this. I think the citizens have enough evidence, but nobody wants to listen to the citizens because we're not in a democratic environment.
Right. Yeah, the evidence keeps presenting itself in conclusive ways that are impossible to ignore and possibly impossible for these governmental entities to ignore. And we just keep plugging away at it. Eventually, the awareness of the people will become greater than anything that the government can use to dumb us all down or to keep us all ignorant. Speaking from my own experience, Sylvain, you came across my radar screen about a year ago when I was co-host on another radio show, and we did a show about chemtrails, and about a week prior to that, I really didn't know that much about them. I was not that much aware of them. I always thought they were condensation trails, of the jet exhausts that would go across the sky, but I wasn't aware that they would linger and that sort of thing. And it wasn't until it actually became part of my awareness that I actually started paying attention to them. And thanks indirectly to you, even though you and I had not met yet, I did do a radio show and use an excerpt from an interview that you did in a Canadian show. I'm not remembering exactly who the host was, but that's how you first came across my radar screen. And that was for me about a year ago. And I didn't, like I said, I didn't know that much about chemtrails at the time. And I worked for the airlines for about 10 years. I understand how jet exhausts work, and I understood how the condensation would work. But this other stuff and how they would linger became more of a point and more and more evident as my own awareness grew. So, like I said before, we wake up, and as a result of others planting seeds in our awareness, and that's what we're doing here at this point, is spreading the awareness, getting the word to the street and waking people up. And, I like to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, including governmental entities, of the fact that they're simply just not aware of it. So, in any case, we're providing...
I wouldn't give them that benefit.
I know.
I can tell you just an experience here. I don't really want to mention too much about the positions of the people I was trying to talk to, but let me tell you, I was going right to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told by the one who is an assistant, put tinfoil on my windows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she didn't take you seriously, that's for sure. But.
And then I asked, do I put it on my car windows too? No.
Uh-huh.
Don't do that. But that's how kind of like stupid.
Yeah.
These people are. Really, they're like, I would call them an incompetent human being. And I think if you can't fire anybody, then they can become that way.
I'll tell you a similar story.
You can't fire a government. If you can't fire City Hall, if you can't fire any form of government, like get rid of them totally, then you will end up getting abuses.
I had a similar story where I used to work. It was close to national headquarters for Air Force Defense here in Canada. And I would take the bus at the time. And I would always pass in front of the that headquarters. And for some reason, a lot of the officers would fill the bus. I mean, there were at least 30 of them coming in. They would fill up the bus every time. And then I had the bright idea, since they're all Air Force people, one day I sat beside the one who had the most stripes on their shoulders, and I said, "Hi, my name is Sylvain. Have you heard about chemtrails?" Oh, my God, you should have seen her reaction. And she said, "Oh, it's all conspiracy." So she knew what I was talking about, okay? "It's all conspiracy, and you guys are all conspiracy nuts." And she really, really lost it. And she was in uniform, and she was not behaving appropriately for that uniform. She should have just said, "Yeah, I heard about it, so what?" You know? But
right.
She got mad, and she raised her voice, and as a matter of fact, she left the bus, and she kept on screaming at me outside. And the other officers that were in the bus, they were looking at her because they were upset that she lost her cool, okay? And because I said, "Look, listen, ma'am," I said, "I'm willing to come to, the Defense Department and give you a free presentation of my findings." And she said, "It's not true, and your findings are not true, and we don't want to have a look at your evidence." And the guy I was sitting by at the time, I don't know who he was. He was just a traveler on the bus. He said, "I believe what this guy is saying. I heard about that on the Internet, too, and you soldiers are just, doing what you're told, and you're vowed to secrecy about this program that, you think is for our own good." And so the people in the bus, some of them started supporting me, but that lady really, really lost it. So she was calling me a fool, this and this and that. She was really out of character.
Wow.
And she was like, she had a lot of stripes on her shoulders. And so it's, they've got something to hide. When you respond with such passion, it's not normal. It's not natural.
Right.
And I think that this is an appropriate place for 467.11 of the Criminal Code, where that person's act or omission allowed a criminal organization to carry on further.
Right. Well, yeah, but the thing is, what can you do? They deny it's happening. They refuse to look at the evidence. They're not a court. They're not a police office. There's nothing we can do with them if they don't want to admit it. And what helped the most was the day that we told, Prime Minister Harper, "You got to give us a response by this date, by Canada Day." I didn't say "or else." I said, "We want a response by a date."
Uh-huh.
Now, that is something that worked because chemtrails stopped for a couple of weeks after that because they didn't know what we would do. That's my only explanation. I'm not a terrorist. I didn't threaten anything. I just put a deadline on the day we want to have a response. And by law, they have 90 days to respond to us, and it's been years, it's been over a year and a half anyways.
So ironically or serendipitously, if you will, there was no chemtrails for a while. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's
so the stuff, this is what we talk about on the show, is focusing on what works, and that's an example of something that does work. So that and elevating the awareness of everyone,
Yeah. Especially those who are already convinced. Those who are not convinced, they can educate themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not here to try to convert them. They have to convert themselves, convince themselves. But our message is mostly for the people who are convinced. If you are convinced, you know how serious it is. And if you know how serious it is, it's time to act regarding chemtrails and regarding the potential war. against Syria and Iran.
Exactly. In acting in a pro-peace kind of a way.
Yeah.
I'd like to give a suggestion about what to do about chemtrails, since I know about that a lot more than Sylvain can talk about the war. And that
Please.
Is, if you don't know what to do, tell another person to just look up. If you know nothing else to do, do that.
Look up and notice. Yep.
Yes.
Pretty simple.
Oh, yes. That's a very good start, yeah. Simple.
In the same way with the development of the awareness for peace, right, in the Middle East. I mean, it's okay to notice that things are heating up in the Middle East because that gives us contrast to help us focus on what we wish to experience. It's not turning a blind eye to it. It's simply noticing it and then placing our focus and energy on what we want to experience.
I think a thing to add to that would be that, you know, most people rely on the mainstream media to get their information. And I think what maybe Sylvain can add with is I think you have to go elsewhere for your information.
Right, because the mainstream media has been my experience. It's pretty fear-based, and it stays that way, you know. That's the stuff that sells, you know, the fear. And
it works.
Yeah, it works. It provides good copy.
When you alter a person's brain state, you take away their executive reasoning powers, little
exactly.
or a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they react emotionally, it's react. It's not act. It's react.
Mm-hmm.
Often.
And it has worked.
We were having a coffee chat in a coffee shop, a couple of us, about chemtrails. And some other people overheard us, and they asked if they could join us at the table, and they said yes, of course. And so the group got bigger. Then this lady said, she comes by, she looks very irritated, she stops by me and she said, "You started this." I said, "Yes." "You want to have some information? You want to join us?" "No." She said, "If it was true, all that you're saying," she was paying attention to us. She said, "it would be in the newspapers, in the radio, it would be on television. And since it isn't, you guys are all liars." And she left. But she gave me a valuable piece of advice. The next time we had a coffee chat meeting, I brought a newspaper. And inside the newspaper, I printed some articles that I got from the internet. And I started reading these articles from mainstream sources in Europe. And more people were paying attention to us because they thought I was reading this in the news. Then I was credible.
Ah.
It's all images,
funny.
You know?
Yep. Well, we've got a minute and a half left in the show. Any parting comments either one of you would like to make?
I'll just thank you. Thank you, and look up.
Thank you, Jack. And Sylvain?
Thank you.
Well, comes back to your initial point of love. And you got to love the world a lot to be able to stand up and stick your head above the above the crowd so that somebody might chop it.
Right.
Love conquers fear, and forget about all the fear you hear in the media. Do what you're here to do, and side with truth, not with comfortable lies. That's all I have to say.
Right. And again, real quickly, how can they get a hold of you?
My email is Sylvain, sylvain.henry, like the chocolate bar, at gmail.com, or sylvain.henry@ymail.com, or in my YouTube at Canadian Spartacus, that's all one word. And my number also is 613-600-5323. If you're a pilot, if you're a police officer, if you're a politician, I'd be happy to give you a presentation, even the Department of Defense. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
So long. Much love to you all, and love the world awake.
Thank you very much.